Well, greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, business, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on homeschool right after this. You know, when you make a $50,000 a year income, you're paying $7,650 in Social Security tax. Then you pay an additional 17% tax on that same $50,000. Now, that's another $8,500. And when you do that, you have just paid an extra $1,300 by paying your tax on a tax. And that makes the real effective Social Security tax rate 17.8%. It's not the 15.3% that you thought it was. Now, isn't that just real special? If you'd like more information about tax and status, call us here at the law school. That number, 417-273-4967. Help take a bite out of crime. Call and ask for our free general law CD package. That number again, 417-273-4967. Now, that free CD package is a four-hour commentary on the law school that's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative, and best of all, it doesn't cost you anything. Tax and status is available. That's our school and compact disc for adult home education. And if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Click onto the archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there. Again, georgegordon.org, and then go to the archives page. All right, our conversation this week, we're talking about homeschool. Homeschool. To most people, homeschool is some kind of a weird, off-the-wall, hey, those are communists, terrorists maybe. They'd have to be Muslims or some kind of a weird religious group or sector or a bunch of kooks. The truth of the matter is we now have about 4 million here in the United States. I can't speak for the rest of you people out there in the world. I don't know too much about your homeschooling movement in Canada or Australia or England or France, but I'll just bet you that there's a lot of people in your country. And I'll bet you this, that if you plug in homeschool into a search engine on your computer, I'll bet you you'll pick up a bunch of books and a bunch of information about homeschool in Brazil, if that's where you're living, or homeschool in South Korea, if that's where you live, or Japan, or Australia, or Western Europe, or wherever. I'll just bet you. Now, here in the United States, our schooling system used to be the best in the world. In 1828 through 1900, we Americans dominated education worldwide. But we jumped off the tracks of sanity and adopted the 10th plank to the Communist Manifesto, which calls for free education for all children in public school. And we've adopted this free public school system. Now, the last time, I just saw this about three nights ago on the news, there was a big news story on the Lehrer NewsHour, PBS NewsHour, in which America is now mediocre. We scored 16 out of 35 or 36 industrialized countries in the world in education. You know, just general education, what do your kids know? They just tested a bunch of 15-year-old kids. Shanghai came out, or Singapore, I guess it was Singapore or Shanghai, I forgot which, came out number one in the world, and America was number 16. So it isn't that we're poor. I mean, you know, we're not the worst educated in the world, but we're no longer the best. Average, that's what they said. That's what we call mediocrity. And that was the goal, and now we have achieved mediocrity. Our educators did not want us to be number one in the world. They don't want us to be number 35. Well, at least that's what they tell us. But they don't want us to be number one. They want us to be in the average, mediocre, you know, just right along with all the guys, kind of like little Georgie Gordon. I was about mediocre when I was in school. I was a C student. You know, well, on a good day, I could make a C. But, you know, that's mediocrity. Now, I'm not opposed to people that are real whizzes and whiz kids. And I'm all in favor of saving college for the best and the brightest. I'm not opposed to some other guy going to college. Hell, I'm not smart enough to do that. So I don't want to get in the way of the really smart guy and take up a seat in college when there's another guy over there that's smarter than I am and you ought to go there. So get after it, partner. What I like more than anything is freedom of choice. I don't want you to get in my way, but by the same token, you know, I don't want to get in yours. But now the public school system has gotten in everybody's way. And they set up and they make the standards. It's totally censored. You're not going to get in public school a book that isn't politically correct. Everything has to be politically correct. I'm going to read you an article about this political correctness, but a little later on. Right now we're talking about an article here written by a guy by the name of Patrick Faringa, A Brief History of Homeschooling. And I think it's worth getting into, you know, just take a look at the history of it and where is it today? And last time we got started on it, and today I think we can finish it, the history of homeschooling. He goes on to say, in 1976, a guy by the name of Holt wrote a book called Instead of Education, Ways to Help People Do Things Better, as his way to show how we can support people to learn without forcing them into conventional schooling. And Holt Associates, 1988. Holt had decided after nearly 20 years as a vocal public and private school reformer that schools were doing exactly what most people wanted, sorting children into economic winners and losers based on test scores, and that trying to reform that system was therefore a truly quixotic pursuit. Holt wanted to help make meaningful change in education, and he was tired of being on talk shows in the university circuit as a type of entertainment. So he decided to do something intelligent. So after reading Instead of Education, people from various parts of the country began to write to John telling him about an option that he failed to mention explicitly in his book, called homeschooling. Holt soon turned his attention to those families who wrote to him to say that they were teaching their own children, published in Scheffer, 1991. Well, within a year, Holt founded Growing Without Schooling, GWS magazine, the nation's, if not the world's, first journal about homeschooling. So here's Growing Without Schooling is a publication put out. Put that into Google. I'll bet you'll find it. Families of different backgrounds, different religious faiths, different educational philosophies relied upon Holt's considerable free advice and help during this time, and he worked to create an inclusive network of support for homeschoolers. Holt recognized that many parents were homeschooling for reasons that he personally did not support, and he seemed to anticipate the current fractious nature of homeschooling politics when he wrote in the second issue of GWS, now that's Growing Without Schooling, back in 1977. Quote, he said, "What is important is not that all readers of GWS should agree on these questions, but that we should respect our differences while we work for what we agree upon, our right and the right of all people to take their children out of public school and to help plan or direct their learning in the ways that they think best." Holt Associates, 1999, page 25. I think that sums it up quite nicely. That's why I said early on, I said, why don't we try something real wild, new, and off the wall? In fact, it wasn't even my idea. The guy that thought this up was a fella who wrote a book back in 1886. I've forgotten his name now. I'll pull it out here and recite a paragraph or two for you in this series here as we progress along. But anyway, back in 1886, he said, what's wrong with this compulsory public education is that somebody else is deciding for you what's best for you and your child. And he raised this issue. He said, let's suppose that we're all sitting in a room, just three or four of us. And we all believe in education. And we all believe that our children's education is very important. And so we decide that what we'll do is we will vote on the subject. And the majority will decide how to educate these children from these four families, four of us in a room. He said, would you allow your friend Bob, Robert, and Bill to decide for you how to educate your child? Think about that. Just take four people in a room, invite over some people for dinner or something, and then just ask the question, would you like to have the majority of the people sitting here at the table decide for you how to educate your child? And he said, nobody with an IQ above 70 would say yes. Well, then why in the world would you want your government or strangers or bureaucrats or professional educators or somebody else to make that decision that you wouldn't entrust to three of your best friends? Three of your best friends. Would you want them to tell you how to educate your kid? And I'm telling you right now, the answer is no. I'm not going to leave that to my friend Leo or John or Tommy. Well, then the shoe fits on the other foot also. If the shoe fits, wear it. Then I ought not to be telling anybody else how to educate his kid. That's just the basics of reason, logic, and common sense in the school issue. Now, all of us are sitting here saying, well, I disapprove of the way that Catholic is educating his kid. Well, so do I. But always remember this. If you and I are going to band together to compel that Catholic over there to educate his kid to our standards over here, one of these days he's going to team up with somebody else, and they'll form the majority, and then they're going to tell us how to educate our kid. So if we don't want that Catholic and Mormon telling us, then we ought not to be telling that Catholic and that Mormon how we want it done either. Now that's the essence that almost all of these homeschoolers have come to. Homeschooling people, you know, are people just like you and I, and they've got all kinds of crazy ideas, and half of them are probably wrong. But isn't it their right to be wrong? I know I'm right, and I don't think that I should allow you to be wrong. Well, what the hell have I got to do with your being wrong? What do I care if you make the wrong decision? No skin off my back. That's the problem that we're all facing. It's intolerance. None of us can stand to let that guy over there educate his kid. That's what our problem is. And as a result, none of us have the freedom to educate our children. We've all lost that same freedom. Now, there is one way to get it back. You're not going to get it back by reforming the public schools. There have been reformers in Washington, reformers in New Orleans, reformers in Chicago, reformers in New York City. They haven't done John Jack diddly squat. And that's because the powers that be aren't going to give up the power. They've already got it. Now, it was surprising that the evolutionists got the school power away from the religious guys. Not that the religious guys probably were handling it very well or correctly, but, you know. But once the religious guys lost the power over the public schools over the Scopes monkey trial, you can rest assured that the evolutionists and the anarchists, they're not going to give up that power. And so to hell with them. I say just let them go do their thing, leave the public schools right where they're at. You're going to have to fund them through your tax dollars, make up your minds to it. But you don't have to send your child to that mediocre public school. And I'm telling you, mediocre is the best that you're going to get out of public school. That's the best. Mediocrity. The best school is homeschool. Second best is parochial school. Third best is public school. And they're mediocre at best. Going on. Well, after reading Instead of Education, people from various parts of the country began to write to John, telling him about an option that he failed to mention explicitly in his book, and that was homeschool. In 1981, Hope published a book just about homeschooling, Teach Your Own, A Hopeful Path for Education, published by Dell in 1981. And he was again on the talk show circuit, speaking about his ideas on learning in this milieu of family and community, which he called unschooling. Neologism of Holt preferred unschooling over the term homeschooling, because little of the learning that he was describing occurred exclusively at home, and most of it did not resemble conventional schoolwork. Now, the work of educators like Dr. Raymond Moore and his wife Dorothy also became more well known to the general public back during the 1980s. The Moores had already written extensively about the value of delaying formal education until at least age 10, based upon their work and research within the federal government and at various universities, and they readily embraced homeschooling as a complement of their work. Now, the Moores soon became vocal and popular advocates for many homeschoolers, particularly Christian families. By the early 80s, more overtly conservative and religious homeschooling publications and groups emerged, some in direct reaction to Holt's ideas about education. Others, as a way to avoid sending their children to what they perceived as a godless monstrosity of public school. See Stevens, 2001. Homeschooling easily accommodated the differing factions, reasons, and political views that these groups espoused, and it is now becoming more of a mainstream choice than a radical move. Okay, now remember, when we started this discourse, we were talking about homeschooling is radical. Not anymore. Not anymore. Homeschooling now is mainstream. In 1980, 1990, it was radical. So if that bothered you in those days, all right, now you can come out of the closet. It's okay. It's no longer radical. It's now mainstream. Indeed, homeschooling has grown tremendously from John Holt's estimate of 15 to 20,000 people being taught at home in 1981 to a recent federal government survey that found nearly 850,000 children are being homeschooled in the United States as of 1999. And as of 2010, the number is now 4 million. Think of that. Less than a million 10 years ago, up to 4 million today. It's growing by 20% a year. It's growing geometrically. Every 5 years, it doubles. You know, by the year 2015, we would expect to see 8 million homeschooled, you know, if the growth rate continues like it is. Now, the purpose for me homeschooling was because I wanted my child to have a better education than she was going to get down here at the Lutie School. Now, the Lutie School has been down here in the Gainesville Public School, you know, for the last 100 years. It's the standard in our community. All of the farmers around me here went to those schools and sent their children to those schools. And they're good people, and I'm not sitting here arguing about them. I'm not running them down. You know, so if you're listening to me in Gainesville, Missouri, or Theodosia, I'm not making fun of you. I educated my daughter at home because I wanted her to have something better than Lutie School. The Lutie School's test scores aren't even mediocre. They're not even average. They're below average. They're below our state's average. So our local school here isn't even an average school at 50th percentile. It's something less than that. And the people that come out of it are good folks, and I'm not bitching about the people that come out of it. But they'd be smarter folks if they'd been educated at home. They'd be smarter if they'd been educated up in Ava at the private school. Now, I've been overcoming my public school experience. I went to public school, and then I came out, and I had all the knowledge that public school could give me, and I was just as dumb as a box of rocks. No, but at age 18 or 20, I thought, well, I'm smart as everybody else, which is about right. I was just about average. I was just an average, dumb as a box of rocks, public school, graduate kid. And then since then, I went to work to educate myself, and I've done a pretty fair job. And then if you're like me, and you're out here working hard, trying to re-educate yourself, trying to get behind the Federal Reserve, and trying to understand how the secret societies work, and the Trilateral Commission, and Council on Foreign Relations, and Bilderbergers, and Queen Elizabeth, and Barack Obama, and the Democrats, and Newt Gingrich, trying to, you know, figure out what in the hell's going on. And then if you're making any progress, God love you. Now, listen, you can make faster progress. You don't have to reinvent the wheel. And your children can get a bigger jump on life if you don't handicap them with public school. So that's my pitch. Now, homeschooling in many ways is a return to the roots of our society, where family, community, religious institutions, and work are all integrated into the daily lives and upbringing of their children. Homeschooling, including mentorships, apprenticeships, still serves to educate many of our country's children, as it did a majority of our influential leaders throughout history. Bolstered by works of John Holt, as well as Dr. Raymond Moore and his wife Dorothy, arguments supporting homeschooling began to be widely communicated through books, magazines, and popular media during the 1970s and the 1980s. Holt's theories about schools being a place for sorting children into economic winners and losers based on test scores ring true for many, influencing an ever-widening range of families who embrace this style of learning for their children, with a federal government survey finding nearly 850,000 children being homeschooled in the United States as of 1999. This style of learning is definitely a trend, not a fad. So how is a child supposed to learn what they need to know to get into college or to get a good job if they aren't learning all those important things in public school? Well, throughout history, homeschooled children have been showing us how, reflecting upon the history of homeschooling, it identifies this trend, and it is an increasingly popular and enriching lifestyle that has been evolving with our culture's dynamic approach to helping children learn. All right, so now let's take a look at some people who have been homeschooled. Who, for instance, have been homeschooled? All right, so let's take a look at this article. There are many famous people throughout history that have been homeschooled. These were students who went on to become artists, inventors, scientists, statesmen, writers, religious leaders, Supreme Court justices, musicians, and even American presidents. Now, there will always be those individuals who believe that children should not be homeschooled because it makes it more difficult to be successful. Well, now, considering all of these famous people who have been taught at home, that belief seems to be more of a myth than truth. Now, oftentimes people say, well, people that are homeschooled will not be socially adjusted. They won't know how to behave out in society. We'll cover that. I'm going to bring that to your attention. Or if they haven't been to public school, they will not have learned those basic skills that public schools teach that everybody out in society knows and respects. Well, like what? Splitting lines of coke, rolling a reefer with one hand, or laying the neighbor girl in the back of your Chevy van? Do you call those social skills that are necessary and imperative to be successful in life? Now, I will admit that if I went to one of these parties, these college parties, I think I'd be a laughingstock of the party. I wouldn't know what to do with the cocaine. I wouldn't know how to split it up. I wouldn't know how to roll a joint. And I wouldn't lay the neighbor girl in the back of my Chevy van. But does that make me socially handicapped? I don't believe that for a minute. Now, English tutor Helen Beatrix Potter never received a formal education. She was always very interested in the study of plants and animals and felt that she learned more from her own self-study than from any textbook. Many considered her an amateur artist because she did not attend a traditional classroom. But her books and her characters that she created, such as Peter Rabbit, Mr. Todd, Benjamin Bunny, Jeremy Fisher, and many others, are still as popular today as when they were first written. Other famous writers include C.S. Lewis, Charles Dickens, Mark Twain, Pearl Buck, and Hans Christian Andersen. Now I want to ask you, can you tell me of any authors that are any greater, more famous, or more popular than Lewis, Dickens, Twain, Buck, and Andersen? Now Mark Twain, you know, granted, you know, he was kind of homey and kind of folksy, as was that cowboy from Oklahoma, you know, back in the 1930s. Well, hey, listen, just because somebody didn't go to school, you know, like Henry Ford only went to the sixth grade. He did go to school, but he only went to the sixth grade. And Thomas Edison only went to the third grade. Didn't handicap those guys in any way, did it? No, these are some pretty famous people, pretty talented people. How about architect Frank Lloyd Wright received a traditional classroom education, but for only 4 years, at age 11 to 15, after which, while still only 15, he was admitted to the University of Wisconsin and given the classification as a special student. He majored in engineering because there were no architectural courses available at that time. Frank Lloyd Wright. Second president of the United States, John Adams, was also admitted to Harvard University at the very young age of 15. He learned to read at home. He was later sent to the home of a neighbor who taught many of the local children throughout the years. John Adams, no formal education. Second president of the United States, went to Harvard at age 15. That isn't too shabby, is it? How many 15-year-olds are in Harvard today? You know, once in a while, they run across one. You know, you see them, they get reported, you know, on 2020 and 60 Minutes. But, you know, back in the olden days, it was not uncommon for people to go to college when they were 15. Now, other U.S. presidents and statesmen who were homeschooled include Abraham Lincoln, George Washington, Franklin D. Roosevelt. Oh, my God, Franklin D. Roosevelt, the hero, the savior of America in the Depression. Yep, that's right, Franklin D. Roosevelt. Now, I'm sure you're sitting out there saying, my God, I wondered what happened to America. If he'd been to school or gone to school, he wouldn't have done what he did to us. Well, Winston Churchill and Benjamin Franklin didn't go to school either. And I want to point out that Benjamin Franklin, Winston Churchill, and Franklin D. Roosevelt were all three 33rd degree Masons also. Now that I see their names here, I just want to point out, homeschooled, 33 degree Masons. Hell, that just goes to show you don't have to be real smart to be a Mason. And now, there are many more than a few celebrities who have been homeschooled. And we're all familiar with Whoopi Goldberg, Dakota Fanning, Jennifer Love Hewitt, and Charlie Chaplin. Jennifer Hewitt. Now, these are just a few of the famous people who were at one time or another homeschooled. In reality, the complete list is an extremely long one. If you take the time to do further research, you'll be surprised at how large this group really is, the group of homeschooled famous people. Mrs. Kirk Thomas is a homeschool mom and advocate of homeschooling. She has additional resources available on her website. So if you want this page here, it was put out in 2007, and it's called http://EZINEARTICLES. It's EZINArticles.com. And that's famous people who are homeschooled. Hey, we're at the halfway point here. Let me remind you that you are listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, and that we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, or heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's eight schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly and has our radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the internet by title and date. That's for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order one by calling and asking for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Click onto the archives page and download that free general law CD package right there. Now, the sources of information that we use in this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing are necessarily going to reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review, they may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review either. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone, and they don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this radio network or local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Hey, we're talking about home school, and as an incident to that, we're talking about public school and parochial schools as well. I've got to bring a subject up here. Could you have passed the eighth grade in 1895? I don't know who sent this to me, but I picked this up some years ago. And here's a test from 1895. It's on one page. In fact, it's not even on a page. It's about three quarters of A1, 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper. And it covers 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 subjects. Grammar, arithmetic, U.S. history, orthography, and geography. Now, this orthography, I don't know what it is to this moment in time. Here's the first question for orthography. You get 1 hour to answer these 10 questions. 1 hour. You got 6 minutes each. What is meant by the following? Alphabet, phonetic orthography, etymology, syllabication. I don't know. 2. What are elementary sounds and how are they classified? I guess it's A, E, I, O, U, A, B, C, D, E, E. I guess. 3. What are the following and give examples of each? Trigraph, subvocals, diphthong, cognate letters, and linguals. I don't know. 4. Give 4 substitutes for caret U. I don't have a clue. 5. Give 2 rules for spelling words with final E, and then name 2 exceptions under each rule. I don't know. 6. Give 2 rules of silent letters in spelling, and then illustrate each rule. I don't know. 7. Define the following prefixes and then use in connection with a word. B-I, D-I-S, M-I-S, P-R-E, S-E-M-I, P-O-S-T, N-O-N, I-N-T-E-R, M-O-N-O, and S-U-P-E-R. I might be able to get 1 or 2 of those. Non means no, post means after, semi means part of, mono means one, super means there's a big or a bunch of, bi means two, dis means unconnected or misconnected, pre means before. I might have been able to answer that one. Define the following prefixes and use in connection with a word. Well, bilingual, disconnected, misrepresented, preview, semiconductor, post, let's see, what's a post? Post-election, non-linear, interlinear, mono, monograph, and super, superlative. Now, you know, maybe I could have answered that one. I'm not sure that that's correct, but now 8, mark diacritically and divide into syllables the following and name the sign that indicates the sound. The words are card, ball, mercy, sir, and then there's 3 more here that I can't quite read, and the answer I would have to give is, I don't know. 9, use the following correctly in sentences. Cite, that's C-I-T-E, cite, S-I-T-E, cite, S-I-G-H-T, fain, F-A-N-E, fain, F-A-I-N, fain, F-E-I-G-N, and then vain, V-A-N-E, vain, V-A-I-N, vain, V-E-I-N, and then raise, R-A-Z-E, R-A-I-S-E, and R-A-Y-S. And I won't take the time to do that, but I could probably do vain, 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 raise, 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 sight, 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 but that fain, 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 I know one of them is to feign make-believe, but 2 of them, I'm not quite sure what they mean. Not special. And then 10, write 10 words frequently mispronounced and indicate pronunciation by use of diacritical marks and by syllabication. I don't know. All right, now that's a subject called orthography. Hell, I don't even know what orthography is. And I just went through it. I just wanted to do that for you because grammar, arithmetic, history, orthography, and geography. Now, I can do a lot better on the geographical test. I think I could pass that 1895 geographical test. But, you know, I looked at this 1895 eighth grade test, and I said, if you were to give me that test today, I'm 70 years old, I've been through the public school system, had a lot of experience in life, I'm a writer. I'll tell you how much I've written. I'm looking up here at the wall. And I can see 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 books that I've written that have 1,000 pages each. It's 12,000 pages of material I'm going to put out in my schools. I can't pass an 1895 grammar school test. My God, I hate to admit that to you, boys and girls, but I mean, that's the way it is. So it's life. Now, here they've got a guy written down here. Don, I only got 78%, Bob. I don't think I could score 78%. 70 would be passing. 70 would be passing. You get a D minus at 70. This guy got 78. You need 80 to get a C. So this guy got a D. You know, that isn't anything to brag about now, is it? All right, so now, did you see that? Now, why is it that we can't? Well, mainly because we can't read. Now, here's what happened to reading. In America, about 1940, I'd say after World War II, we got into this thing called sight reading, look say, and I started writing books. Now, I learned from Dick and Jane, so I learned phonetics. The very first thing that my first grade teacher started us off on was the alphabet. So we had to memorize the alphabet. So we just went through A, B, C, D, E, F, G, and we learned the alphabet. And then we learned the sounds of all of the letters. Nobody picked up a reading book. Nobody picked up a card and said, see Jane walk or see Jane run. We didn't do it. Instead, we learned all the letters, learned all of the sounds of the letters. And when we got through, we had the phonetics down. It's the code to language. You have to learn these phonetics if you're going to learn French or Dutch or Spanish or whatever. But after World War II, the public educators, they got into the act and they said, we can teach children how to read faster if we show them flashcards. And so they would show you S-E-E-C and then S-A-W, saw. And then on each one of these cards, there would be a picture of what's on there. So when they showed you a picture that said D-O-G, dog, there would be a picture of a Cocker Spaniel on there. And then when they showed you a picture of saw, S-A-W, they'd show you a picture of a saw on there. See? And then when they showed you a picture of a cat, C-A-T, they'd show you a picture of a cat and so on. Now, yeah, that's pretty fast. Because as soon as a kid could see the dog, cat, saw, you know, tree on the card, he could say tree, card, dog, you know, automobile, motorcycle, whatever. And he could do that. And it is faster. I don't deny it. And that's why 50% of Americans today are illiterate and can't read. When they see the word dog, they can read dog. When they see the word dehydrostreptomycin, they're lost. They can't read it because they don't have the code. Now, there's a code that goes with spelling, a code that goes with reading. There's 512,000 words in the English language. 286,000 of them are obsolete. So, not a 512, let's just try this out. 512, 286. So about 226,000 words in the English language. Write this down, Mary. Wait until Bob comes home tonight. You'll just bedazzle him over dinner. 512,000 words in the language, 286,000 obsolete. That leaves 226,000 words in the English language. Now, how many of those 226,000 words does the average person know today? You know, the average Joe Sixpack. How many words do you know? The average? 10,000. 10,000. That's your vocabulary, Mary. So when your husband comes home tonight, you can ask him, you know, what's your average vocabulary? And he'll say, well, I don't know, Mary. You can say it's 10,000 words. Now, how many words do you use in a day? The answer is 3,500. In your average daily conversation, just walking, talking, chewing gum, walking down the street, and going shopping with your girlfriend, Sally. And as you're discussing things, you're going to use an average of about 3,500 words. That's all the words you need to know to learn a language. So as soon as you learn 3,500 Spanish words, you'll know the Spanish language. As soon as you learn 3,500 French words, you'll be able to speak French. As soon as you learn 3,500 English words, we'll call you an English speaker. Now, here's one more. In 1900, the average high school graduate, had a 20,000 word vocabulary. That's double what our high school graduates have today. That's their vocabulary. That's how many words they know. Today, if you're a college graduate and you studied language, it was either a major or minor. You studied language, you have a 20,000 word vocabulary. Today, a person who studies language, could be English, Spanish, French, or something else, and you got a 20,000 word vocabulary, which is what a high school graduate would have in 1900. Now, boys and girls, are we getting smarter and smarter or dumber and dumber? Now, when there was a woman here by the name of Charlotte Isherby. It's an odd last name, I can't spell it, but Charlotte Isherby. And I'll give you a stab at it. I-S-C-H-E-R-B-I-E, something like that. I mean, sounds like a French name to me, and it's an odd name. She wrote a book called The Deliberate Dumbing Down of America. She used to work for the Department of Education in the Reagan administration. She got disgusted with that, came out, wrote a book, and said, let me tell you what's going on here. Boys and girls, we have been deliberately dumbed down, but even if it was an accident, it doesn't make you any smarter. Now, I showed you a little earlier here in a couple of programs here, we're talking about this thing of people in the spelling bees who are homeschooled. These are kids that are homeschooled. They do the spelling bee. 3% of the people who are homeschooled, they get 13% of the slots, 286 slots, and they got 36 of those 286 slots. And then scored in the top 10% of all the spellers. Now, those are people being homeschooled. Now, when they go to homeschool, they're learning the code. They're learning phonetics. Phonics, they call it. Phonics. The sounds of the letters first. They're not learning how to read by look, say. If you learned how to read by look, say, you're illiterate and can't read. Now, you're sitting there saying, well, I can read a lot of words. Sure you can. But every time you come up to a word that you can't sound out, you're dead. Can't read it. Now, I can sound them out. Doesn't mean that that's the correct phonetic punctuation or the spelling of the word or the sound of the word, but I can come pretty close. You know, I can get within the ballpark. All right, so now with that out of the way, I have to tell you, I'm public schooled, 70 years old, and I'm a little bit better than dumb as a box of rocks. But when I got out of school, I was dumb as a box of rocks. I'm a little better now, but I'm still not at the 1895 level. I cannot pass an 1895 American public school grammar school test, eighth grade. I can't to this day. And I would submit that most of you out there probably can't either. Don't you think that maybe we ought to work a little harder to see if we couldn't improve our children's education to get them up to at least the 1895 level? God, I wish I had an 1895 education. Eighth grade. And I've got a lot more respect for my granny now. She only went to the eighth grade. My granddad went to the sixth. But my granddad was the mill superintendent at Northern Redwood Lumber Company and the Hale-Castile Lumber Company. Sixth grade. He was the mill superintendent. My grandmother went to the eighth grade. She could do algebra. She told me that when I graduated from high school, I knew more than you when I was in eighth grade. She told me that when she went to school, this is back in 1890, she was born in 1882, so she would have finished eighth grade, you know, somewhere around 1895, somewhere around this period of time. She said, I knew more than you when I was in the eighth grade. And she never went on to high school. Now let's talk about socialization here, because socialization is a subject matter that the enemies of homeschool bring up quite often. Now, it was Theodore Roosevelt, Teddy Roosevelt, the nation's first socialist, he said, to educate a man in mind and not in morals is to educate a menace to society. You know, a moral education is a necessity. George Washington said that. You know what? God Almighty said that. Same thing. And here's Teddy Roosevelt, kind of just rehashing what God said and what George Washington said. To educate a man in mind and not in morals is to educate a menace to society. Now, many homeschoolers share this sentiment when it comes to public schools, believing that the moral relativism, violence, peer pressure, drugs, and promiscuity found inside their gates provide an inadequate setting to properly socialize their children. And yet, in 92% of superintendents believe that home learners are emotionally unstable, deprived of proper social development, and too judgmental of the world around them, according to a California study by researcher Dr. Brian Ray. So what makes homeschool socialization such a hot topic? With approximately 4 million children currently being homeschooled in the United States, along with a 15 to 20% yearly growth rate, many professional educators and school boards are concerned that this exodus will keep funds from entering the public education system. That's what the real issue is about. It's not about the education of your child. But rather, if you take your kid out of public school, we lose $56 a day. Remember I mentioned yesterday or day before, I said, listen, go ahead and leave the tax structure just like it is. Take the amount of money, it's $500 billion a year, and just give it to the parents of the children and let them spend the money to educate their child any way they want. Let's try this. All of you Mormon people out there in Utah, on average in this country, it costs $10,000 a year to educate a kid. Now, you've got Mormon schools out there in Utah that you cannot afford to send your children to. And you'd like to, but you can't because you don't have the money. And I'm sitting here, you know, I'm a goyim, I'm a non-Mormon. And I'm prepared to go ahead and pay my $10,000 in property tax this year and put it into the pool and give it to one of you, and you can educate your kid in Mormon school. How's that? How many of you people out there at Mormon land would like to do that? I'll bet you we could get 100%. You know that? Hey, you got a kid? Here's $10,000. Go educate your kid. Forget public school. We're not going to give him any money. He could educate him at home school for $500, or he could educate him in parochial school for $2,500. and pocket the difference. God, you talk about a windfall. You talk about a transfer of wealth. And you know what the benefit would be? All of those children would come out of those schools 60% smarter than they're going to come out of the public school that you're going to send them to right there in Salt Lake City. Who is it that's opposed to that plan? Every public school teacher in America, every public school administrator, every politician that's connected with public education is opposed to that plan. And I'll bet you that every American who's got a kid would buy it in a heartbeat. Now, I agree that most of you taxpayers out there hate the idea. You're sitting there chomping at the bit and saying, that's the dumbest thing I've heard come out of your mouth, Gordon. Well, hang on here a minute. You're going to pay the damn tax anyway. And all I'm suggesting is that instead of giving the tax money to all these bureaucrats and teachers and administrators and all the rest of the screwballs out here that can't teach a kid to carry guts to a barrel, give it to the parents. Same amount of money. Ain't going to cost us a dime more. In fact, over the long haul, probably cost us a lot less. All you got to do is say, I'm going to give you any more increases. And every one of these damn public school administrators is standing up in your legislature this afternoon, bitching and moaning for more money. 5 years from now, it's not going to be $10,000 to educate a kid in public school. It'll be $11,000, $12,000, or $13,000. Rest assured. So, again, here's the sentence. Let me read it to you. Many teachers believe that home instruction by people that are untutored, unqualified, that's what they call it, unqualified. They're going to undermine the jobs of the people who are in the public school system. And you know, they're exactly right. Because starting in the morning, none of you public school teachers would have a job. Now you'd have to go down and apply for employment at your local charter school or at your local Catholic or Mormon or Baptist school. And you public school teachers know that if you went down and had to pass the test and apply for a job at the local Catholic high school, you couldn't qualify. And for all of you that could qualify, you'd have to take a pay cut by about 50%. Because you see, the parochial school teachers only get paid half as much. That's the bottom line. Hey, I'm out of time. I've got to give you a final reminder here before I run out of time. You've been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. And all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the internet by title and date for your listening convenience. And I'm out of time, so we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.